Charlotte and I are delighted to be here. Jim Woodruff, when he was here, parked his, what do you call it, trailer, travel motor home in our yard, put another electrical outlet where he could get plugged in. And I miss Jim. He left us and went home. He was so excited about going home to be with Jesus and to seeing him face to face. Our history, we had 40 years together as teammates. 5 years in Arkansas, where he was the upground preacher and I'm the underground guy. And then he moved to Boston with us for about 5 years. And I brought his book. I don't know if you've seen his book, Sayings That Saved My Sanity. It translates the Beatitudes and the relationship language. And I hounded him to write the book in the 70s when I heard the teachings, because it gives the essence of the essence of the mind of Christ. And I don't do marriage counseling. I tell people who come, it just doesn't work for me. What works is when you own your life and the other person owns their life and they live in response to the creator of the universe, then that gives God room to do his work. And if you stay close to Jesus and really study him, what will happen is you'll be a very kind person, regardless of what the other person or how the other person may act. Does that make sense? It's a radio program in Nashville, talk show, and this guy was talking on the radio, and he said, why are so many people getting a divorce? And, you know, these young couples, and they do 4, 5, 6 years, or 10 maybe, or more, and they're getting divorced. And so, anybody out there got anything to say? And I said, you know, I think I got something to say on that. We'd been married about 30-something years at the time. So I get the guy on the phone. Have you ever tried to call a radio program and get a song? I never got through, but I got through on this one. And he says, well, yeah, married, 4 daughters, grandchildren. You got anything to say? I said, yeah, I do. He said, what's, you got a secret? I said, I think it's a secret. He said, I don't make my wife responsible for my happiness. I own that one. And he got real quiet. Got real quiet. Because in marriage counseling, many times they come to fix the other person. And we're all broken. A lady in Memphis says, life is hard, God is good, and humans are imperfect. And so if you're married to an imperfect person, right, honey? Thank you, darling. She said amen. So I'd like to pray, and then I'll tell you what we're going to do tonight. Father, first I just want to thank you for the life of Jim Woodruff. He's been a part of this family. He loved being here. He loved telling your story. He loved to break open the life of your son. I've never seen anybody do it more authentically and more real. He was so excited about coming to see you and to see you face to face. I'll never forget the line he said, if Jesus goes to hell, that's where I want to go. I about jumped out of my seat when he said that. And I said, yes. And I pray tonight that we can get a little deeper glimpse of Jesus and how he was with people in ways that just is so incomprehensibly kind. So be with us tonight and help what we do to be helpful. In Christ's name, amen. So I want to get you that. If you want a copy of this and you don't have it, you can go to my website and or send me a note and we'll mail you one. The first hour, I basically gave my testimony of how Jesus captured me 57 years ago. And I wanted to give that testimony. And I grew up on the dark side. And Charlotte had me write a book, and Jim Woodruff put his stamp on it. He said, you need to write that thing. It's called Delta Blues, From Darkness to Light. It's on Amazon. But it's how I came out of the darkness of alcoholism, divorce, abandonment, and how Christ came after me and found me at the University of Mississippi after growing up in a home that was hostile and desperate, so to speak. So I just knew when I got out of there at 17 that I didn't want to do to my children what was done to me. And so I was captured by Jesus. I remember getting drunk one night and waking up the next day and thought, well, my mother's an alcoholic, my granddaddy's an alcoholic, and I figured I am. And if I don't make a change, I'm going to die. And for the first time in my life, I read the book of John. Now, you'll know how desperate I was because I never read books. But I read the book of John in the King James Version. It took me 3.5 hours to read it. But I got stopped on one line, and that line was, Jesus said, I came to give life, and I came to give it abundantly. And I thought, he's a liar. Or he's crazy. But I wanted it to be true, Kyle. I wanted it to be true. But I didn't know the story. Took a Bible class and flunked it. And so I got me a Bible story book with pictures where I could just get the chronology. And so I got hungry to know what was true. The minister's wife divorced, and I said, well, I can't trust preachers. So that means I'm going to have to read this thing for myself. And since you can't trust preachers, I'm going to have to learn Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. And I wasn't a good student. But I tell you what was bigger in me than my thought about how dumb I was, is I wanted to live. And so I did learn Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic. I spent the next 7 years in college seeking, trying to know the story of God. And so tonight, in that quest to know the story, I invested hundreds and hundreds of hours in looking at the story, and particularly the story of Jesus and his relationship with Peter. So here's what we're going to do tonight. I don't have a script. I'm not into drama. But I'm going to tell you the story of Jesus as if I were Peter. And I want you to just listen. And then I'm going to open it up for questions. And if you'll ask the question as if you're talking to Peter, I will give you the answer that I think Peter would say to you about that experience of hanging out for 3.5 years with this man called Jesus. Now, one of the interesting stories to me was Paul met Peter for the first time, and they spent 15 days together. Can't you hear Paul say, Peter, what was it like to be with him? This is what I think he would say. Well, I'll never forget the first time I was fishing down by the sea, and been fishing all night long and caught nothing. We were tending to our nets. So he comes up to me and he says, would you mind if I got in your boat? Sure. Pushed out. Started talking to the people. And then he stopped and he said, let's go fishing. I said, I've been fishing all night long. There's no fish out here. He said, let's go fishing. We pushed the boat out in the area that I'd been all night. Load through those nets out, bam. I mean, those nets start jerking. We pulled in so many fish, we filled 2 boatloads. And I looked at him and I said, get away from me. Get away. I'm not worthy to be in your presence. And he looked at me and he said, don't be afraid. Just come with me. And I'll make you a fisher of men. I'd never seen anything like this. And I left the nets. James and John were a couple of rich kids. Their father owned a fleet of boats with hired servants. And they came. And we began to move around. One day, this leper approached him and fell at his feet and said, have mercy on me. And I watched him take his hand and put his hand on that decaying skin. And I watched that skin become clean. And we begin to move out throughout Galilee. Watch the lame walk, the blind see. And after several months, along with a whole lot of others, he went out one night and left us. He'd been all night praying, and he comes back to me, and he says, he walks over to me. He said, I want you to be with me, and I'm going to give you the power to cast out demons, and I want you to go out and tell them that the kingdom is near. And then he picked James and John. And Simon the Zealot. Well, see, I knew Simon carried a dagger under his cloak. And when he picked Matthew, the tax collector, I knew he had slit his throat in a heartbeat. Because, you see, Matthew was collecting money from his Jewish brothers and giving it to the Romans. He hated his guts. I didn't particularly like him either. And we began to move around the villages. And he would talk about lampstands and mustard seeds. And we knew out in the villages there was talk. When we talked kingdom, every spring of the year, somebody would claim to be the Messiah, get a couple of hundred men behind him. They would storm Jerusalem, take them out every time. We knew something was going on. Something was happening big. And for 3 years, his popularity began to build and build and build. And we were excited. He sent us out into the villages to proclaim the power and to heal and to do mighty things. And we came back one time and he said, we need to get some rest. He just heard the word that John the Baptist had just got his head cut off for confronting Herod for sleeping with his brother's wife. She hated his guts. And she took care of that. And so he said, let's go get some rest. We went across the Sea of Galilee. Now watch this. There were 5,000 men waiting. You know the story. He fed them, but that wasn't what happened, really. That happened. But the big thing is they sat in groups of 50 and 100. And after feeding them, he turned to me and the other disciples. And this is what he said, and this is how he said it. Get in the boat and get out of here. Very curt. Boy, I'm telling you, we got in those boats and we began to move out. And we watched him move into the crowd and dismiss them. And then he ran up into a ravine all by himself. We were ticked off. We knew we could take them down. We knew the Roman Empire could be taken down that time. And from here on, his popularity went right down the tube. People began to move away a little while later. We followed him over. And he confronted us with coming to force him to do what we think he should have done. And he said, you're going to have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And I said, oh my God. And watched everybody begin to move away from him. And then he turns to me and he said, what are you going to do? Are you also going to leave me? I said, where are we going to go? Where can we go where someone speaks life the way you do? And so we stayed with him. Well, one day, and this was probably the hardest day of my life with Jesus. One of the hardest, probably not the hardest, but this one. He said, they're going to kill me. They're going to take me to Jerusalem. That's the scribes and the Pharisees. And they're going to spit in my face and crucify me. Well, when he said that, it's like he took a knife and drove it right in the middle of my gut and lifted it. And I just went crazy. I just grabbed him and says, no, not on my watch. Not on my watch. And then he looked at me and said, Satan, get behind me. You think like men, not like God. That was hard. Because I just told him a few minutes earlier that he was the Messiah, the Son of God. And he told me I need to keep quiet. Don't tell anybody that. I was confused. So he took us up on the mountain. We went up on the top of this mountain, and there were all three of them. There was Moses, and there was Elijah, and there was Jesus. They were all standing there, and I was terrified. And I said, well, let's build three big shelters. That's one for Moses, one for Elijah, and then one for Jesus. And all of a sudden, a cloud covers, and Moses is gone, and Elijah is gone, and he's standing there in this incredibly bright white robe. And a cloud comes over, and we hear the voice of God. And God said, and I quote, "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." That's when we were going down the mountain. He said, "Don't tell anybody about this until after the resurrection." And we looked at each other. Get down to the bottom of the hill. And there was an argument going on between the disciples and the religious people. And this father runs up to Jesus, falls on his face. "If you can, will you help my son?" The boy was foaming in the mouth, rolling in the fire, epileptic. And Jesus said, "What do you mean, if I can? With God, nothing is impossible." Then the man hit the ground. He said, "I believe. Help my unbelief." Jesus healed him. Later on that evening, we were sitting around the fire. And we said, "Well, what is it? Why couldn't we help the boy?" He said, "Only by prayer. Only by prayer." And then he said it again. "They're going to kill me. If some of you are in the Bible, you know, I know about the Bible. Mark 8:39, 30, and 10:30. Here's what happened. 8:39, 30, 10:30. Actually, I wrote the book of Mark. Mark penned it, but I wrote it. I told him what to write. And then he said, "I'm going to die." And that was confusing. When he finished saying that, we were having an argument. And the argument was about which one of us was the greatest. And he stopped us. He says, "What were you boys talking about on the road?" It got really quiet. Nobody said anything. And then he called a little child, and he sits the child in his lap, and he said, "Unless you become like a little child, you won't enter the kingdom." Then he said it again. "They're going to kill me. I'm going to Jerusalem, and they're going to mock me and spit on me, and I'll be crucified." Well, let me tell you something about James and John. We knew this was the way they thought. They pulled him aside and said, "We want, when you come into your kingdom, one to be on your right and one on your left." Really ticked us off. We were indignant that these guys would ask that. And Jesus said, "You don't understand what you're asking." They said, "Yeah, we do." And he said, "Can you drink the cup that I drink? Are you willing to drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" They said, "We can." And Jesus said, "You will drink the cup. You will be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But the right or the left, that's for whom the Father decides. If you're going to be great in my kingdom, you'll be a servant." Well, here's the point that I finally got. I'm going to die. We were all confused. What does he do? He goes to the epileptic boy. "I'm going to die. They're going to kill me." And what does he do? He goes to a child. "I'm going to die." Arguing about who's the greatest. And what does he do? He goes to a blind man on the side of the road that everybody tells him to shut up. And Jesus stops and says, "Bring him to me." And Jesus asked a question. I couldn't believe he asked this question. Here's this blind guy. He said, "Bring him to me." We told him to shut up. And Jesus said, "What would you like for me to do for you?" The guy was blind. Why would he ask him that? And he said, "I want to see." And he gave him sight. I'm going to die. Confusion. And then a person. What mattered to him was a human being. Well, we got close to Jerusalem. was getting near the Passover, and he's asked us to go set up for the dinner, for the Passover feast. So we get it all set up. And as we're laying out the seating arrangement, we're having this little problem about who's going to sit where. And as we're walking in and arguing about who's going to sit where, he comes in, puts a towel around his waist, gets a bowl of water, and goes around and starts washing the feet of James and John, of Matthew, of Simon the Zealot, and of Judas. And he comes to me. I said, "That's not happening. Not with me. You're not washing my feet." And he looked at me and he said, "If you don't let me wash your feet, you've got no part of me." Well, I just said, "Lord, just don't just wash my feet, wash my hands, wash all of me." And he said, "You've already had a bath today. I just want to wash your feet." And we shared that meal. And he said, "One of you going to turn on me?" And we looked at each other. I leaned over to John. I said, "Who is it?" He leaned over to Jesus. And he says, "The one I dipped this bread in and handed to is the man." He dipped it, handed it to Judas, and said, "It's time." We didn't know exactly what was going on. He said a lot of things to us that night. You can read about it. John wrote about it. And we went to Gethsemane, and he asked me and James and John to get a little closer. You could see the sorrow. You could see the trouble. He was troubled. And he said, "Would you watch for me just for 1 hour?" And we said, "Yes." He took off, probably as far as you could throw a rock. And we heard him scream when he hit the ground. An hour later, he comes back and he woke me. He says, "Couldn't you watch just 1 hour?" And sweat was moving down his brow like blood. And then he went away another hour. And he came back and we were still asleep. And the third time he came back, he woke us and the soldiers came. And I pulled that sword. And I did everything I could to rip the head off of this guy. But I clipped him. Jesus picks the guy's ear up and puts it back on. And he says, "My kingdom is not of this world. I could call down 12 legions of angels if I wanted to fight. I have come from another world to bring something new." And we split. We ran. Myself and John followed to the courtyard. John knew how to get in there. And I walked in. The woman says, "Aren't you one of his disciples?" I said, "I don't know. I don't know him. Second time by the fire, he says, "Aren't you one of the disciples?" "No, I don't know him." The third time, after listening to him slap him and beat him, this, "Yes, you are. I can tell by your accent. You're one of them." And I begin to curse and swear. I never knew the man. In that moment, split second, the cock crowed and I remembered. He said, "Tonight you will turn against me 3 times before the cock crows." And I looked at the rest of them. I said, "James and John will leave you. Matthew will leave you. Simon will leave you. Not me. I'll die for you. I'll go to prison." In a split second, I saw myself for the first time of who I really was. And I wept and I wept and I wept. It was all over. All of our dreams, all of our hopes, all our ambitions, all the things that we had left for were gone. And they took him out in the garbage dump and hung him there for 6 hours. And can you believe the thief next to him? One cursed him. The other one said, "We're guilty. We deserve this. Will you remember me?" And he pushes off the nails and says, "I got you covered. Today you'll be with me." You know, there's really no language to tell you because you weren't there. We try to imagine it, but I was there, and I saw him die. And it was all over, and I was wasted. But you know the story. 3 days later, some women came and said, the tomb is empty. We told those women they're crazy. They're out of their minds. You know, we can all say the women seem to get it before the men anyway, right? They get it. And so, it was Sunday afternoon. I was by myself, alone. He walked into the room where I was, and he put his arm around me, and he said, peace, you're okay with me. I got you. I need to help you understand something right now. When I met Jesus 3.5 years ago, and I told him to get away from me, I'm worthless. I believed that all 3.5 years, that I was worthless. And he couldn't talk me out of it. He couldn't talk me out of it. I felt worthless. And he says, no, you're not worthless. And the way he expressed it before they killed him, this was his dying prayer. Father, help them understand you love them as much as you love me. Now, where do you put that one? Where do you put that in your brain? That the creator of the universe, the maker of heaven and earth, who became a human trapped in the human body, his point was to help us understand at our worst, the Father loves you. That means you're his favorite. It's impossible. You see, God really doesn't think like we think, does he? He doesn't think like we think. Well, I didn't know what to do with that. You know what I did with that? I went fishing. James and John went with me. Nathaniel went with me. Thomas went. We went fishing all night long. We're out on the water talking all night long about all these stories, all these moments, how he calmed the sea, how the lame walked, the blind could see, Lazarus was raised from the dead. We were all there. We saw it. And we kept remembering the stories. Didn't catch any fish. As dawn broke, there was a man standing on the shore about 100 yards away. John said, it's the Lord. And it was. I jumped in, got to the bank. He had some fish and hush puppies going. He said, bring some more fish. Because he told us to throw the nets on the right side. And we hauled in 153 fish. And he fixed us breakfast. We had a grand time. Grand time. And then he said to me, do you love me, Peter? I said, yes, Lord. I love you. Then feed my sheep. And he said it again, do you love me? Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my sheep. And he said it a third time, and this really broke my heart. Do you love me? Oh, God. Lord, you know I love you. And then he said to me, I need to tell you what's going to happen to you. Right now, you can go free and do what you want to do, go where you want to go. But when you get older, they're going to tie your hands and lock you up. And you're not going to be able to move freely anymore. And I looked around and I looked over there and I said, well, what about John? And he said, what has that got to do with you and me? Isn't that an amazing story? Here's one takeaway. I'm going to give you the takeaway that I take from this. If Jesus would stick with me as a betrayer who was befriended and loved and cared for, and I betrayed him, if he would stick with me, then he will stick with you. He will stick with you. Now I'm going to open it up since I've got to go back to heaven. Any of you got any questions about that relationship between the two of us or the other disciples? What would you ask Peter? What would you ask me? I could be right. I could be wrong. Question?
I have two. One big one.
One legalistic and one real?
Yeah, the legalistic question would be, so Peter, how would you, what was your takeaway on, can I tell you that you are Peter and on this rock I'll build my church?
Okay.
And this is the real question would be, you were with Jesus, God in the flesh for 3 years, but yep. You grew more when you didn't have Jesus physically with you. I think I would have grown more with Jesus physically with me.
Okay, the first question. When he asked me the question, what are they saying about me out in the villages? And I said, some say you're Elijah, some say you're Jeremiah, some say you're John the Baptist raised from the dead. And he looked at me and he says, what do you say, Peter? Who do you say that I am? And I looked at him and I said, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And then he makes this statement, on this rock I'll build my church. I was so felt so good that I answered correctly. And then he said to me, I want you to keep your mouth shut. Don't tell anybody that. And I thought, what's the deal? And that was after that he said, they're going to kill me. And I went berserk. Point was, I had the right words. But I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. I missed the point. All 3.5 years, I missed it. The reason my growth really began to grow afterwards was because I finally got the point after he rose from the dead. I had to make a decision that I believed that I could be forgiven, that he loved me. And now I'm on a new foundation. And then after Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit came on me, the whole world opened up because I could see things that I didn't see. What I knew in those 3.5 years is that he loved me. Anyway, my growth began to take off as I began to build on the foundation of what it means to be the Messiah, is that I am his favorite. But so are you. So are you. That's a word from another world. That's a word that when you go to bed tonight, you will grapple with the possibility that if you were the only person living here to die just for you, that's what I've been growing in. And when they hung me upside down in Rome, I was honored to be there. Because I chose him. I chose to believe that truth. Question, is that enough? Play with that one? Okay, other questions?
What characteristics did you see in Jesus when he healed the man's ear?
What characteristic did I see when he... I was shocked. I was shocked. I was angry. I was ready to fight. I was ready to die. Right then, I would die for him. And when he took my sword away, I didn't know what to do with it. It's like he took away my reason for being with him, that I could fight. And I was ready to die, and he took it away. I saw courage. I saw compassion for the man. I saw courage and I saw compassion. That's what I saw. That was the characteristics that I saw. Questions? Peter's probably going to have a bad word for me when we get to heaven. Because I don't know if I get him right of that. Question?
You kind of had some smart remarks about some of the other apostles.
Yep.
Just how did you guys get along?
We didn't. We did not. I thought James and John, a couple of rich kids, when they called him aside and said, which one of them the greatest, we were indignant. The rest of us looked at them and said, oh, sorry, you know, rich kids. They think they're better than the rest of us. No, we didn't like them. And he put James and John and the three of us together all the time. So it wasn't, we were not happy campers, but what held us together was we knew he was the Messiah. And so we weren't focused on himself. And then when he confronted us for arguing about the greatest, he pulls a little child and sets in front of us. And he talked about lampstands and mustard seed. We didn't have a clue what he's talking about. But we knew he was the Messiah. And there's nobody like him. And we weren't going anywhere because he's going to pull something out somewhere that we don't know. That's what I thought. Say, nobody thought of us. If I were to translate it into language today, I would be a gun runner. I was a guerrilla war fighter. I carried that sword all the way through. I would take him out. I'd die for him. All the rest of us were ready to die for the kingdom that we thought. When he said kingdom, we thought war. When he said kingdom, he thought life. He raised the dead. There was another world here. When he stood in front of Pilate, can you imagine standing there in front of Pilate after they beat the fire out of him and said to Pilate, "You got no power over me. I have come from another world. My kingdom is not of this world." Pilate didn't know what to do with him, but he sure did respect him because he went out to the people and he said, "This guy's innocent. Do you want me to kill an innocent man?" And they gave him the choice between Barabbas and Jesus. And of course, they took Barabbas. So he had courage. He knew who he was. He knew where he came from. And he knew where he was going. And his point was, I want you to know who you are and why you are who you are. And your biggest challenge is the same as mine was, to believe the creator of the universe loved me and valued him and valued me as much as he valued Jesus. That is the biggest struggle. When he talked to the woman at the well, been married 5 times, living with a guy and one her husband. What does he do? This confused us. What's he doing? Not only talking to a woman, but she's a harlot. And he's talking to her, and he offers her living water. Doesn't condemn her, doesn't probe her sex life. He just said, "I want to give you a gift of living water." And you know what? She dropped her water bucket and went back to town and says, "Come out here and meet this guy who told me everything I've ever done. Could this be the Messiah?" People came out there, spent 2 days with those people, and they said, "We no longer believe because you say it, because we have seen him. And all of you have seen him. Or you wouldn't be here tonight. You've experienced him because he's been in pursuit of you." He said, "My Father is always working." When they beat him up for doing good on the Sabbath, and he said, "Why are you persecuting me? I'm just doing what my Father does, and my Father's always working. Would you like to see Jesus in your life? Check that grandmother out. Check your best friend in high school. Check your second grade teacher who had time for you. Who is it in your life who felt, who valued you?" There was God. When love touched you, he's been with you before you're aware of it. I love this story. I love to tell it. Because what I've discovered, I was a campus minister. I'm Terry Smith now. Peter, thank you. You can go back to heaven. Really, don't you appreciate Peter? Question.
Jesus talked about the end of the world.
Yes.
It was imminent.
Yes.
It was coming soon.
Yeah.
He said things like, you know, those who are standing here will not taste death until they see God.
Yeah.
Were you surprised late in your life or shortly after Jesus died that the end of the world did not happen?
Jesus said a lot of things that I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, but I did think it was imminent. And you're right, I did. But, you know, I didn't get that right either. What I like about Jesus is it's okay to be wrong with him. You don't have to get it right to be with him. That's the point I got. So there's a lot of confusing things that I didn't understand. And thanks for coming back, Peter. Because I don't know what he would say, really.
The kingdom doesn't have
to equal the end of the world. Yes, yes. See, what we do and what we've done, we do like the disciples. We do an intellectual process. And that's all a good thing. God says, love God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. But you got to bring in your heart and your soul. And there's just a lot of thing with your mind that you have to engage all three dimensions. Your head, your heart, and your gut. And sometimes we just kind of run around with our minds and trying to find a box to fit Jesus in. And he doesn't fit in anybody's box. He just doesn't fit. And I don't have the answers to some of those questions. Even today I don't. No, but I'm searching. I'm seeking. How much time we got? Question.
Do you think that running headlong toward a tomb that last you knew was being guarded by Romans. And you were doing so on the basis of a questionable report
right.
from some women who said they'd been there earlier. What were you thinking? And subsequently, what did you think when you got
there and the tomb was empty? Somebody stole his body. Somebody stole his body. That's what I thought. And I didn't believe those women. A couple of buddies of mine were on a road, and they were talking about all this, and they were down in the mouth, and he walked with them and talked with them, and they didn't recognize him. And after he explained to them about the prophecies and all that was going on, and they stopped and had a prayer before dinner, and they opened their eyes, and there was Jesus standing there. And they came back, and they told us they saw him. But see, I saw him that afternoon. He came to me that afternoon, alone. And that's when I let go of my intellectual and emotional and gut response that I was worthless. I felt worthless. And when he sat down with me, it was no longer an intellectual exercise. It was the reality that he knew the truth about me and that I was made in his image. And the Father loved me as he loved him. I didn't know what to do with that. I spent a lifetime. But finally at the end, when they crucified me, I just was honored to die the way he did. And I just said, flip me upside down. Crucify me upside down. I'm not worthy to be crucified like him. It's a process. It's a process. It's a growing process. And you're going to keep growing. And you're going to hit forks in the road. And you're going to wonder whether or not I'm here. Whether Jesus is here. And you get to decide. But if you know the story, if you've opened the book and read the story. The problem is, when people read the Bible, they read it through a pair of lenses, as if it's a rule book. It's a story of God breaking into history to let you know I'm with you. And when you get in the pinch, I'll be there. And you get to decide whether or not you believe it or not. That's between you and God. I love this story. I promise you, this is the story that saved my life. When I got to the fork in the road in my 40s, when I hit the wall, and I wanted to pitch it and go back to the dark side that I grew up in, when I decided that he would stick with Peter, that he'll stick with me, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to leave this wife and children and do what my daddy did. I'm not going to let the family of origin that Peter called the empty way that was handed down to him by his forefathers. I'm not going to be ruled by a lie. I will be free and I will live by the truth that God loved me so much that he gave his only son to die. That's the truth. And he rose from the dead. And personally, if I didn't engage that reality with an intentionality, I'd be dead. I make a choice, and I make that choice every single day. You see, Jesus never said, try to follow me. Try to get this. Because there's no place in your brain for the creator of the universe who blew the stars into existence, who knows the cattle on 1,000 hills. That he says the earth is like a footstool. Where do you put that in your brain? That's another world. And he's saying that creator broke into history. And you had a little battle with that one. Question. You just show him it's time. What time is it? We're supposed to be done by 8. Okay, I'm so excited. I'm 76 years old. And I'm telling you, I have never been more excited about life. And it's not about what you get or what you don't get. It's about a relationship with the creator of the universe. And well, how many thoughts do you have, God? How many more thoughts can you give me? And you know what he says? Psalm 139 says, how precious are your thoughts, O God? How vast are the sum of them? Were I to count them, they would be more than the grains of sand. If you wake up and train to tell your gut that tells you you're not good enough, you don't measure up, you're worthless, you don't count, I'm disgusting. And you just renounce that lie and you choose to believe Jesus says, I'm with you. And you come to me and learn from me, for I'm gentle and lowly in heart. Here's my prayer. I pray in the name of Jesus that there will be a wave of kindness that will flow from the people of God. That there'll be kindness in your home. There'll be kindness with your children. There'll be kindness with your grandchildren. There'll be kindness with your enemy. You'll be kind. He was kind. He had boundaries, but he was kind. Can you be kind to yourself? If you're kind to yourself at your worst, you'll be listening to Jesus. And you say, well, I can't be kind to me. Well, then you can choose not to be. And you can try to believe Jesus, or you can train to wake up in the morning and kneel down and say, I surrender to the love of my Father. Isn't that good news? Father, I want to thank you for the mystery of your presence tonight. You're closer than the blood in our veins. Jesus, you brought life, and you brought life that gets richer and deeper as we go. And all the struggles, the injustices, the death, the questions that we don't have, that we don't have answered, that we will focus on your Son, who made clear one thing before they killed him. And your dying prayer, Jesus, that we would understand that you love us as much as you love Jesus. And that's personal, and that's intimate, and that's a gift for every person made in your image. I believe that tonight. And it's my prayer that people will go home tonight, and regardless of what they feel, they can know that the truth of your love can be known by them personally. In Jesus' precious name, amen. I love the way God counts. One, 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 one. Just one. And we have to choose to believe that. Because it goes against everything in us, right? Lord bless you. Thank you.